Welcome. It is time for another Toolbox Tuesday.
Yeah, continuing, I think on the last week of our 8 week first 400. So we're talking about kind of just phone etiquette, patient etiquette, all the different things. And it seems like a little bit of a topic that shouldn't need to be talked about. I would argue that it's probably one of the most important ones,
All
though.
right. We saved the best for last. If you have not been with us for Toolbox Tuesday before, every Tuesday in our practices, we pick one of the tools and the hundreds of resources that we have available to make sure that everyone is on the same page and calibrating the messaging for that resource. So we have been in an 8 week series of our first 400 program, which is our training program for our new team members. We have been focusing on front office and going week by week on the topics that we are reviewing with them and common objections that you will have along this process. So saving the best for last, etiquette, which of course we are not waiting until week 8 to discuss some of the etiquette, but just like everything else, you cannot assume that people have the basics down about this topic.
Yeah, I think this I'll let Jennifer kind of talk about the stories that kind of go along with this if she wants to pepper a few of those in. But we have no shortage of them, and I'm sure you guys don't either. It's you know, there's everyone has their bad moments. Patients are definitely, and we've all seen those, you know, moments kind of come up, whether it's something happening in their own personal lives, and we just happen to be the next person that they see. Or it's a lot of fear that happens in the in the patient chair with you know, expecting dental work to be painful, whatever it is, and that can rear its ugly head in kind of different ways. But distilling or diffusing a situation down is a talent, and it's a practice talent, and it definitely needs to have a structure and different ways to operate to kind of make sure that happens.
Well, and really what this boils down to is, we have some wild stories. I said this could be an entire course just on the stories that come from things. And I mean, I have this, we talk about adventures in interviewing. I have this from adventures in interviewing. Sen keeps telling me I need to write a book just about that, but I mean, honestly, some of these things just seem like they didn't even happen in reality until you see that they happen. But the point being, just like every other protocol that you have, do not assume that etiquette that people are going to come in having just basic etiquette, or that they've had etiquette from other offices they've worked in or other customer service jobs. And we're talking the basics from how people dress, how people speak, how people communicate over email. I can't tell you how many shorthand texts that I've had people send to patients, or jumping emojis or GIFs or whatever it is that is not appropriate to talk to patients about. I cannot tell you how many times I've had to discuss wearing undergarments when you come into the office, or making sure that your undergarments are not showing when you come into the office. Again, things that should be assumed, but they're not. So don't assume anything. Put it down. This is the standard that we are holding everyone to. This is not discrimination for anyone. This is what our standards are. It makes it a lot harder to come back and argue. I didn't know. One of my favorite stories, I had one of my front office call me and tell me that she had. Sen is already laughing because he knows what I'm going to say. She had one pair of pants that she could wear to work, and she did not dry her pants the day before. So she calls me 10 minutes before her shift is supposed to start and tells me that she does not have any pants to wear to work. And so I said, "Do you have a skirt? Do you have scrubs? Do you have a dress? Something else you can wear?" "No, I have nothing else that I can wear to work." I said, "Okay. So you're telling me that you're not going to be at work." She says, "So you're telling me I can't come to work?" I said, "Are you asking me if you can come to work without pants on?" I'm like, that's the conversation that we're having right now. Okay. Real life conversations that have happened, but again, we have a dress code. We have to talk about some of these things. And I mean, we can laugh about it, but this is real life, right? When we've had team members who had conversations with patients that escalate to a whole other level. I had a front office who told a patient she wanted to take her outside. This is not the bar that you're going to go and go fight somebody in an alley with, but that's how she would handle a situation in her personal life. So that's how she's handling it in the office. And those are real serious situations that happen.
Yeah, it's not okay. And then we don't want to sound like this is happening all the time. These are isolated issues that have happened here and there every once in a while with honestly team members that really weren't around very long.
Yes.
You know, because obviously you can understand why someone wouldn't be allowed around very long if they didn't think that pants were a requirement. But you know, it's just goes to show that we need to, and this is a little bit of the core value conversation too, because if someone understands kind of what we're all about as an organization, what we're all about, how we treat patients, how we treat our team members, things like that, the etiquette kind of comes a little bit more naturally at that point. And so it's when we don't have those conversations or people don't quite have a grasp on what the core values are, what our team values are, our vision is, that's when things can kind of go a little bit off the rails. And so, it's not to say that we have to kind of outline every little detail about people's dress code and what they say, and hardcore scripting about, you need to say exactly this word after this word, things like that, verbatim. But we need to have kind of a vibe of kind of the way you should operate and the feeling you want to have people have, whether you're working with them or you're helping them as a patient. So it's that goes a long way to the etiquette portion, because there's no situation that we can't script every single situation perfectly. Yes, there's a core group of, situations that happen over and over in a dental practice. Just like there's a kind of a core set of procedures that we'll do in a dental practice, but we cannot make a protocol or a script for all these millions of outlier situations. And so with that, we just need that etiquette. We need those kind of core values of those just how we operate, our operating guide to kind of guide us around those other situations.
Well, I think the more standardized, just like everything else, you have this topic can be very uncomfortable because you do not want to embarrass someone. And I mean, the stories that we're talking about that are way, outlandish. I mean, even those people, when you say it back to them, this is ridiculous. But where this really becomes uncomfortable is maybe someone really has trouble with spelling or with grammar or with punctuation, and it's just a limitation that they have. And so you don't want to feel like you're publicly humiliating them, but we can't have emails go out to patients that don't have proper punctuation, capitalization, grammar, all of the things. We have grammar AI that's installed on all of our computers for our emails, and spell check and autocorrect. And I have sentences that, with our scripting for emails that are laid out with proper punctuation and capitalization and spelling and whatnot, so that people have something to go back to as a resource. Again, we're not expecting everybody to be perfect, but again, don't assume that someone knows how to write an email properly. I mean, even just the basics of you need to have a greeting. It's not, or we're not, this again, this is not your friend. We're not just starting with, hey there, or hey, whoever. Like, this is not your girlfriend that you're writing to. This needs to be professional.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, the objections that come along with the etiquette week are really where the rubber meets the road, right? We're in at the end of the 8 weeks. Now, in full disclosure, there are almost always some things that we're still fine-tuning with someone when they come to the end of their 8 week onboarding with us. But where we're trying to get at is they should be 90% of the way there. And when we say 90% of the way there, we mean 90% of the way there independently for whatever their roles and responsibilities are. That means they do not have their hands held. That means that they can run their own zones, is what we call them, whether it's front office or back office. And a true mastery of a skill is being able to do that independently. So when you can do it independently and you can train someone else to do it, that's when you really have it down. So those are the levels that we hold people to. In our practices, if someone is not going to work out, we want to know that sooner rather than later. We want to know that before the 90 days, right? And we want to know that definitely before 6 months or a year. That's not to say that things don't come up with people and, sometimes it doesn't work out for one reason or the other, but we don't want to get to the end of the first 400 and say, well, we just hope that they come on board and that they're better and that things are better over the next 4 months. If they have shown you in the first 60 days that they have potential and they are making progress, that's a different scenario than hoping that person is going to turn around and be an entirely different team member in the next 4 months just because more time has elapsed.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. And this is the first 400 is to get them to be contributing. Had a mentor kind of a long time ago that, is this person crew or cargo, right? We want people. This is 90, or excuse me, 60 days to get to this person to being crew, meaning they're actually rowing the boat in the right direction. They're helping the boat move faster, right? They're not being towed. And it's inevitable. When someone comes on, they don't know the systems. They might not even know dentistry at that point. This might be one of their first jobs. We have, a fair amount of younger people, and I think a lot of dental offices do as well. But they don't really know how to operate. There's a little confidence issue. There's definitely some competence issue. But it's how fast can we get this person onboarded so that they're not being towed, right? So they're actually contributing and helping out, right? This is not to say that they're going to be the best team member in 60 days. That's almost not the case across the board ever. But we don't need that person to be that. We just need them We just need to shorten the time that we are not putting so much time into this person and taking away from our productive actions to get this person onboarded. So the faster that we can get this person to support us in what we need to do to make a productive day and our team to make a productive day, the better. Yeah.
And we've also, this is part of our accountability for our existing team members too, because we've also seen this happen. We've gone through the checklist that we've talked about in our prior weeks of every single week. We break down the specific skills that they are supposed to have down by that week. We have this signed off by our leadership team. This is posted for our doctors and our leadership team so that everyone is on the same page. It has goals on there. Hey, if there's still things that we need to master so that everyone is in agreement, this is where we are with this new team member, because we've also had the opposite happen where someone gets through the first 400, everyone signs off, everything is good. And then all of a sudden, a couple months later, things blow. And we have to take a step back then and look at ourselves that, hey, we need to hold ourselves accountable first, right? There's a common denominator of our team and our training processes. Did we really make sure that they had mastered all of these things? Because if you're just checking off the list to have one more thing to be done on your to-do list, that's not helping anyone. And that's not helping the new team member. And then all of a sudden, things boil over because we've allowed it to go all of this time. So it's also about holding our existing team members accountable, because if we are going to continue to grow, we have to be prepared to be able to train new people, and it cannot be the end of the world. And we say this about our doctors too. We're exaggerating a little bit, but the doctors, especially at chairside, they should just see hands flying. They shouldn't even know which assistant is in there. It shouldn't be obvious to the doctor, and definitely not obvious to your patient if you are training a new team member. One of the things that is banished from our pathway vocabulary is I'm new. That is just an excuse. That is automatically making it look like to that patient that you don't know what you're doing. So the patient shouldn't be aware either. Again, I'm exaggerating a little bit. Obviously, if someone is shadowing or that kind of thing, it's going to be a little bit obvious, but we're not allowing the fact that we are in training to be a crutch to not be able to stand on your own 2 feet.
Yeah, and that's something we repeat a ton with our point people, or kind of our mini managers, and definitely the team members that we have training, which is just about everyone at this point. But that point that Jennifer made is, are the patients and the doctors cannot know your training. And one the reason is, and obviously, like Jennifer said, the doctors, if they look up, they're going to see a different face, but the person training behind that person sitting chairside needs to guide them so that they're going to be grabbing the right instrument, putting the suction in the right spot the whole time. So that doctor really cannot know that. That really is a little bit of a hands-on kind of, on the job type training situation right there. But we can't have a situation where a doctor does not get the support they need in a certain procedure and they're hamstrung a little bit in multiple procedures just because we're training someone. Right. And on the same note, the reason we want to have the team members have a lot of accountability with these new hires is when everyone, almost across the board, every time you ask your team, what do you need to kind of get these jobs done? That certain things are falling behind, I'm too busy, I have a whole mountain stack of, claims to kind of get through, whatever it is, they're always going to see we need more team members, we need more team members, we need more team members, right? That's rarely the case that they need team members, right? But when you do, if they're going to be held accountable for training that person, it's not going to be plug and play. And so I think and so they need to realize that if we're going to have a new team member, this means that there's a little bit of a burden on everyone to get this person started and get this person contributing to the team very, very quickly. And it's not just Jennifer going in and plugging someone who's going to be turnkey and all of a sudden their problems go away just like that. That just never happens, period. And so if, because they we want them to hire, we want them to see the good, bad, and the ugly that comes through with these interviews. We want them to hand pick who they want, obviously with our input a little bit. We always have the decision on that one. But they're going to have a big say in who they hire. And the reason is that because if that person doesn't work out, we don't want them pointing fingers at anyone else, especially us, right? It's going to be on them a little bit, right? If that person didn't work out, or if they're just not working out in the 60 days, and it's just not a good fit, they need to know what it's going to take to get that person replaced, and also get that next person onboarded very quickly.
Yeah, I just used this line with our doctors and our leadership team a couple of weeks ago when we were in this exact process with a new team member, looking at it from all sides. And I said, you know, if it's not going to work out, I can't just hire a new assistant from Amazon Prime and they'll be here on Friday and all of the
Right.
problems will go away. You know, again, are we just trying to solve a short-term frustration right now because we don't want to communicate with this person, or have we really done everything that we possibly can? Because I say that over and over and over again. If I terminate someone, even if I'm saying, please walk out the door, we're just not the right fit. It is a heavy burden, right? You are taking away someone's income. Everyone has families. They're trying to support themselves. They left other jobs. They turned down other jobs for you. But I take it really seriously. We're talking about messing with people's lives here. So
Right.
if we get to that point of terminating someone, I want to go to sleep that night knowing we did everything possibly that we could on our side to try to make it work and that I can have peace with it. Even when that happens, those situations are difficult. So putting that in perspective of like, hey, we're taking a responsibility on here and we need to make sure we've done everything we can on our side of things. And it's not about always liking someone. We've had plenty of team members we don't like as people. Okay. Are not going to hang out with these people outside of the office. They are great team members. They can drive results. I don't need to paint their toenails on Friday night. I don't know how we follow it up with anything else other than that, leaving it on that line. You don't have to paint their toenails on Friday night. All right. So we are going to be picking up on our first 400 on our back office training program. Now, next time around, we'll start that same process for how we're training assistants. And I think especially for doctors, this is really where the pain points come with that assistant. When you're working chair side, you're going live and you're working with someone that may or may not know what they're handing you and, you know, all of those things. So how do we break that down again, whether they have dental experience or not? We have trained people who come in who do not know mesial from the distal. They're the same as the patient asking what the beep is a distal and how we can get them onboarded. So come back for that series if you want to learn more about our training program in the meantime and how we can help you establish your training program to create a self-managed team. You can reach out at connect@pathwaydentalsolutions.com, or our website is pathwaydentalsolutions.com, and we are on all of the social media platforms.
See you guys later.
All right, we'll see you next time. Bye.